Life Audio.
Move forward in faith when we are overwhelmed by fear. All of us can relate to those times when we know we should be taking steps forward, but because of fear, whether it's fear of the unknown or fear of our present circumstance or fear of what others might think, instead of taking those forward steps, we stay where we are. How do we move from the place where we're allowing fear to dominate our behavior or lack of behavior? How do we move from the place where we're hanging on to fear and instead hanging on to faith? Faith or confidence in God. The fact that God knows the future, the fact that God is God and we are not, the fact that God has our best interests at heart. How do we move from a place of fear to a place of faith? That's a great question, and it's one that all of us struggle with from time to time in our lives. And I'm thankful that we have an incredible guest on today that helps us break that down.
Well, good day to you. It's Joel with The King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
Hello and welcome to the March or Die Show today. Very glad to have you joining me, and I'm excited to share the interview that you are about to hear. I've said this before, but I've been blessed with some great relationships in my life and being able to meet some wonderful people. And today I have the privilege of sharing with you a conversation that I had with one of these folks, and you're going to love it. It's going to be encouraging and helpful to you. But before we get there, I want to ask you to do one thing. If you are not yet subscribed to this podcast, please subscribe right now. Whatever you're doing, wherever you're listening from, you can pause for just a second and hit the subscribe button. That lets you know when this and other content comes online, pushes directly out to you. And then once you've done that, I said it was one thing, it's kind of a two-parter. So the first thing is you need to be subscribed. The other thing is you need to then share this out with others. As other people find out about this podcast and other people subscribe, and as the platform grows, I am able to do more and more, and I want to continue to get this content and other great content like this out to you. And very excited to do that. The conversation that you are about to hear is It is quintessential March or Die. If you listen to this podcast, you know that often I am drawing the contrast between staying where you are in life, breathing, doing the things you're supposed to, but not really alive emotionally and relationally and spiritually. You know that you are not moving forward. That's death. The better decision is to march, to put one foot in front of the other and continue to move forward to a place where you can better impact whatever enemy happens to be sitting in front of you. You need to march when it would be easier to die, but you have to make the decision. The question is, how do we, when there are incredible obstacles in front of us, and often the obstacle is fear, how do we make the decision to march? I had the opportunity to interview someone that I've gotten to know over the last couple of months, Nathan Spearing. Nathan is a former Army Ranger, served at a very high level in the United States military, left his career kind of at the peak of his career to make decisions and to do things that were in the best interest of his family. In spite of everything that he had invested his life in, he took a step of faith, and he explains that. He breaks all of that down, talks through what that looks like, and through his lived experience and many of the resources that he even produces through a podcast and a blog, helps us to understand how to view the world properly, how to understand God's call and God's direction, and then how to take the steps that we need to take. This conversation, it's a little bit longer than normal, but it's one that I know will be a blessing to you. So please enjoy, appreciate, and value this conversation with my guest, Nathan Spearing. Nathan Spearing, thanks for joining me, man. Really appreciate it.
Glad to be here.
We have an awful lot that we can talk about, and you talk about a lot of kind of different things. You're very diverse but well-rounded in what you present, what you talk about, what you write about, your podcast, all those things. But I wanted to talk today specifically about masculinity, I guess, would be the big topic. But you raise boys. You've been in a very masculine work environment in the past. You've made some decisions related to your family. You articulate this well. I'd love to talk about those things. But let's start before we get there with your story, and particularly your faith story. What was your upbringing like? What was your faith journey like? And how did you get to the point where you have made some of the decisions that we'll talk about here in just a few minutes?
Yeah, I am the oldest of seven children, and we were homeschooled for our entire education through high school. So never set foot in a classroom, a traditional classroom. We did have a homeschool covering that had other families, a cooperative, but kind of a non-standard education. It was even less popular, you know, in the 90s graduated high school in 2002. My dad is an entrepreneur. He's a mechanical engineer, did a few years working for a defense contractor, but then started his own company. So some of the earliest memories that I have related to my dad's work, I can vividly remember them kind of sitting the family down and talking, hey, dad's going to quit his job and he's going to be doing this other business and we're going to be eating peanut butter and jelly sandwiches a lot.
Right.
And, and sitting the family down and talking about that. You know, some of the more formative things in my upbringing, you know, both my parents were Christians, both born and raised in households that faith was important. My mom was raised by her mom. My grandmother was single mom situation. She lost her husband when my mom was 6 months old.
Yeah. Wow.
Devout Catholic, and has and still has a lot of roots in that, but is in a more of a Protestant walk now. And then, you know, my grandfather and my grandmother on my dad's side were just rock solid, you know, didn't really come from a lot of means. My grandfather worked, you know, industrial plant shutdowns, trying to fix paper mills and things like that. It was kind of a foreman. My dad grew up in that culture, so they would work shutdowns when they got of age. They would work kind of around the clock, time and a half for my grandfather, and kind of just grew up in a really hardworking blue collar culture. And so that was a huge emphasis in our upbringing. Besides faith being important and everything, you know, being done for a higher purpose, being able to work and having a work ethic to do things that are difficult. And so where I chiefly learned that was at age 13, my parents bought a 3-bedroom house when my mom was expecting my youngest brother, the seventh child. So we moved into, you know, bedroom wise, a pretty good sized house, but bedroom wise, all five girls were in a room together, five sisters.
Wow.
And then my brother and I shared a room, and then started remodeling and adding on to that house. So from age 13 until I left for the Army at age 19 was kind of every Saturday, pretty much. My dad was really good at observing the Sabbath as a break from work. And so we would not do home stuff on Sundays, but we would work a 15-hour day on a Saturday.
Wow. Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't I remember in some ways missing out a lot of things on Saturdays. My friends were going and doing things, and you know, we were running the sewer line around front of the house and tying it into the main stuff. But that was incredibly formative. And then something that I realized when I got to the Army was pretty unique in our society, even amongst military guys, the ability to do work, to work well. And so I think, you know, between that kind of blue collar, like, you know, roll up your sleeves culture, and then faith, and the unique education was all very formative for me.
Growing up in a house where faith is important, it's funny to hear you describe that. I grew up, I went to a private school for a little while, a Christian school, but I was homeschooled for a lot of my upbringing, myself and my sisters, because education was that important to my parents, and them controlling education was that important to my parents, our faith. And, you know, all the things that you just described, minus the ability to work on houses and such. I was taught how to work, but just go out and work hard. I'm not sure I learned a lot growing up in terms of skill, but even growing up in that environment, there comes a point in one's life, there did for me, where faith had to become something more than just what was important to my parents or even what was mildly important to me. And it had to become something that I really put my arms around. Obviously, anyone who follows you, who listens to you talk, who reads what you write, faith is very important to you. And not faith broadly or generally like faith, but a specific personal relationship with God. When did that relationship become personal to you? What were the circumstances around that, if there were circumstances, or at what point did you say, this is my faith, not just my parents' faith?
Yeah, I think that as I think about my faith, one of the things that I think is a benefit for homeschooling is it in some ways delays the negative peer pressure about who you are from becoming a factor until a little bit later on in life. Your social circles are in some ways a lot more managed by your parents. And so you're hanging around people with like beliefs instead of being kind of thrown out to the wolves, if you will. And so I think I can't in my household remember a time where I was like, I don't know about this.
You know? Yeah, right.
And the discussions I've had with friends about it that have, you know, grown up in similar backgrounds, I really believed, or my parents really lived their life like, you know, somebody that actually believes the faith. They weren't hypocrites in a lot of the sense. Like, I knew that my mom and dad believed what they were teaching. You know, does that mean they were perfect without sin? No.
Sure.
But I did, there wasn't a reason for me to look at them growing up and thinking, you know, this is a bunch of rubbish, what you guys are doing. And, but I guess what I would say that it was really tested. You know, I swam swimming with the local high school kids starting when I was 16. My parents were like, we're not driving you to 5 a.m. weekday morning practices. So if you want to do the swimming thing and you have a car and you're willing to put in the bill for a lot of it, we're going to allow you to do it. We're going to allow you to see where this goes.
Yeah.
So in some ways that was tested a little bit in a somewhat controlled, because we're you know, swimming laps. There's not a whole lot of time to be, you know, there's some locker room time with other high school boys. And so I guess that would be the first time that I really started to realize, oh, you know, my upbringing's a little bit unique here. You know,
I'm different than these guys.
Yeah. And so there would be some conversations very similar to conversations in the barracks in the military, you know, going to basic training. But I think that the enlisting in the military, in the Army, I basically worked the summer after high school and then enlisted. And it was a couple months after I enlisted before I actually shipped for basic training. But showing up to basic training was when the crucible began for the faith, and even just the diversity of backgrounds and thought processes and people, the way people view the world was was even more stark than, you know, high school athletes in the government schools. And I remember getting kind of right before I shipped off to basic training, one of the guys that I was in fellowship with just said, hey, look, you need to wear your faith on your sleeve and let them hold you accountable, because there is a soul, you know, there are mortal beings created in the image of God. And even though they may not profess Christ as Lord, they'll know right and wrong, and there will be some accountability that comes from that. And that would probably be the single, I can't even really remember exactly where it came from or who. I just remember being kind of in a group of guys that, and they'd say, hey, wear it on your sleeve. And so my standard line became, you know, hey, I'm a homeschool Christian, I'm a virgin, and I don't drink, I don't cuss, you know, and people's heads just exploding to meet somebody right. and to just, you know, the virginity part, you know, of all of that in the you know, enlisted infantry training barracks was just blew everybody's mind.
Yeah.
And so that sparked a ton of conversation between guys. They were just, and I can remember in basic training sitting there, and there'd be 6, 8, 10 guys kind of doing a lightning round on me, you know, what if, you know, Britney Spears, you know, is here right now, you know, and just, no, I have this commitment. This is the deal. This is, God said, this is for marriage only. And I trust what he says is actually for my benefit, and nothing's going to change that, you know?
Yeah.
And so it ended up being, you know, and then obviously, oh, you know, you're signed up to be an airborne ranger. You know, this is, well, what about thou shalt not kill, you know? And say, well, what about, it's actually thou shalt not murder.
Right.
You know, there's
a
difference. There's different words, even though we may have kind of a flattened vocabulary in this area, like what it actually means. And then, you know, let's walk through the Old Testament here a little bit, and some of the most valiant warriors in the history of humanity were men of faith. And so, you know, just tremendous opportunity. And that's, I think, when you know it's yours is when it's tested and you maintain it.
That's good.
Not to mean that I didn't have issues, that I'm a sinless guy, but in a sense was able to live out of that that identity in Christ, even in hostility, and then just the amount of conversations that happened. And then when firefights happened, and when, you know, my motto was, I'm invincible till God's through with me, which is kind of a hybrid between Stonewall Jackson's quote and Jim Elliot, kind of said, you know, Stonewall Jackson saying, I'm as safe in my bed at home, you know, than I am on the battlefield. And so really believing that at a doctrinal belief level, but then, you know, having that tested and just having kind of that brief moment, like, okay, I still believe it, you know, I can execute, and I can flank and charge through and fire, and then even having conversations afterwards, like, we don't know how you did that, you know. It's like, well, I can't be killed until until God says, you know.
Right.
And I had, you know, there was a brief moment that I was like, okay, you know. And then that was it. And then once you've experienced it once, and you say, well, and you acknowledge how complex this universe is, to think that me, my lonesome and my way of living and my thing can create an end that I desire, whole, like, without the billions of things that are happening every second in this universe that God set in order, to think that I can control very much of it through what I do, and essentially understanding that I'm a character in a story God's writing, and I don't have to live in fear. And had some conversations this past weekend with people that this concept of fear is a sinful, you know, in the context of being worried and anxiety, and things like that is not from the Lord ever.
Right. Right.
And having to walk that out in areas where there was a lot out of my control, and and then believing that the Creator's knitting it all together in some supernatural way, that the the clay doesn't get to tell the potter, you know, how how this is going to go down.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
That's so good. Yeah. That's good. I think you and I talked about this a little bit, but I remember the first time I thought about God's sovereignty, that God is, you know, overall, was after a major firefight in Iraq. And I got to the other side of that and just went, yeah, nobody cares. Nobody cares who I am, where I came from, what I did. I need to do the best I can. That's not a license to act reckless or to, you know, be irresponsible, but God is sovereign and I'm not. And that was the very first time I had that thought. And it has to be in stark contrast, I think, to just the chaos of the world, to realize, you know, where does peace come from? Where does confidence in the midst of all of this come from? It comes from knowing that God is God and I'm not, and that's okay. But until you come to that point, it is hard to live that out. Were you, you must have been, because this was, you were very young going into boot camp, obviously, and then advancing through your career to make those decisions. Were you well discipled? Did you have a mentor who taught you, you know, the doctrines of the Bible that you needed to hang on to? How did you come to understand these truths in order that you could then hang on to those later on?
Yeah, we growing up, a lot of our Sundays was my dad sitting and opening the Word and going through it. So the vast majority, I would say, of my Sundays were home church with my dad going through the Bible. Now, that's not how I've ordered my life, and we can get into that a little bit more, because I think that there is a lack of community outside the family that a man needs, and he needs to have a lot of time with other men and a lot of vulnerability with other men. And so we can unpack that a little bit. But, you know, first and foremost, my dad demonstrated that you can open the Word of God and you can read it and you can apply it. And he was a student of the Word, and he, in college, you know, before there was the ability to kind of digitally search the Bible, he had topographically kind of broke out Proverbs and verse by verse and in a notebook, so that he could reference, you know, the ones that were dealing with money and the ones that were dealing with work and the and things. And so he knew the Word. And so first and foremost, he was going through, and I can remember, you know, starting Genesis 1 and then just working our way through, you know, large portions of the Bible, chapter by chapter, talking about it, you know. And it was not heady. It was not theological. It was not, you know, necessarily systematically categorized like a lot of the evangelical culture today. It was just just in the order that the Bible has been done, and chapter by chapter.
Yep.
We did attend a couple churches and have relationships with men in local churches. We'd do kind of a once a month with a church, and we would have people over. So I can think of probably 15, 20 men from my hometown that I admire and hold in high esteem.
Yep.
And so despite not being in a weekly Sunday morning service, my family was practiced hospitality. We were in other people's homes, the homeschooling network and things. My senior year, we did a worldview class taught by another man in town. He owned a construction company, but also was just very well read in kind of civics and history and things like that. So we would have to pull a headline, front page article and break it down. What's this author's worldview? What are they presenting the facts in a certain way to drive a certain conclusion? You know, what's actually being presented? Is this accurate? And so we were kind of forced to view, this was kind of at the being 20 something years ago, really recognizing the mainstream narrative and breaking it down. And I can remember getting my first several papers I got back. There was no length that he prescribed. It's just like, pick an article, any article, break it down and tell me. So there would be 600-800 words, 1,000 words, and the first several ones I got back were D-minus, red everywhere. This is the dumbest thing ever. This is what they built a straw man and you just started beating it. What's your problem? And so having, a year of weeknights, I think it was probably 2 hours every week for my senior year, breaking these kind of culturally relevant things down.
Wow.
And having a man that understood history and understood the founding father. We had to memorize the Declaration of Independence. That was our final exam was a recitation of the Declaration of Independence.
Incredible.
And dinging us for every word that we got wrong.
Right.
So that was significant in forming a critical mind and thinking mind to kind of step back when a lot of the different narratives that we can get trapped in is somebody kind of the way I've talked about it before is they define the octagon. This is the octagon. We're going to be in here. This is our rules. This is the way this is going to go. And a lot of times for those of us that believe in God, this human being has erected a really tiny octagon and isn't really taking into place, into account the things that are bigger. And so kind of learning to say, no, the octagon's not that tiny. I'm not coming into that ring with you. The Creator has said, this is how it is. This is His world. And I'm not coming into there and getting into the fight over the specific terms that you want to. And that was, phenomenal and has shaped a lot of way that I view the world, was from that, senior year class with just a small business owner that was a critically thinking man, and shaped a lot of the way that I think now.
It's incredible training. It's funny how, and you're right, homeschooling, the homeschool movement, particularly during the 90s, was something that was looked down on. I'm a little bit older than you. I was homeschooled in the late 80s and early 90s, and particularly here in California, it was unheard of. Like, you were the weird people on the block, right? Like you're not really teaching your kids anything. We had the city that I lived in, or a small town that I lived in, the truant officer, I guess is what you call them. They worked for the school district. They would come to our house. It was like a regular occurrence. And we were constantly being told that, bad things were going to happen to my parents. My parents didn't care. They just kept pressing. But it's funny how people think that you're at a disadvantage because your parents are taking your education seriously and getting back to, what does God say? What does the Bible say? What are the principles we were founded on? And all of those things. It's unbelievable. I think a lot of people are catching on now, but what a weird view that staying out of public education is somehow going to hurt your children. Anyhow, we could talk a lot about that, but one thing I wanted to ask you about, and this is kind of an aside to even the masculinity conversation, we're eventually going to get to to what I asked you to come talk about. But when you went into the Army, I've been asked a lot about Christian, particularly young men going into the military, and how hard that must be. And I've always said, just from my own perspective, having gone into the Marine Corps, that for me, because I made a commitment to live for Christ regardless, it wasn't really, to me, it wasn't that difficult because the line was so clear. It was, I'm on this side of the line, and you can be on that side of the line if you want to. This is who I am. That doesn't mean I'm going to spend my days criticizing you. You answer to God for what you do, but I also answer to God for who I am. So I'm not chasing you down. I'm not ridiculing you. I'm not correcting you. I'm not trying to be the Holy Spirit in your life, but I'm going to be consistent to the values that I say I hold, and I'm going to be good at my job. And one of the things that I learned, because a lot of Christians in the military, at least this is my experience, again, maybe yours was different, but a lot of Christians in the military, they cry about persecution, and because I'm a Christian, I didn't get this promotion or that job, or people were always down on me or whatever. What I observed in the military, in the Marine Corps, in the infantry world was, if you're good at your job and you're not hypocritical, it may take a minute, but all of the criticism and the rest of it's going to go away, and people will know they can depend on you. And I mean, people made fun of me, whatever, but I never experienced what I would consider persecution for my faith, because it was mine and I was good at my job. And because of that, you know, I move forward as well, in some cases better than other people. Was that your perspective? That's the advice I give a lot to Christian young men going into the military. Be good at your job and be consistent when you say you're going to do something and you're going to go far.
Absolutely. I think that the stereotype in our day and age is that Christians are soft, Christians are weak, and that's the assumption that my leadership had of me whenever. But what was interesting, I talked about this on another podcast recently. My team leader in Ranger Battalion, Corporal Reese, he found out I was a Christian after I had already choked him out in a rear naked choke. So
that's a good time to find out.
Yeah, day one, they come into the classroom and they take the eight privates assigned to Bravo Company, and they say, "We're going on a run. Keep up," and bolt out the door. So privates, you know, scampering, trying to get out the front door of the company, you know, and taking off down by the airfield. And, you know, one or two guys that came to Bravo Company wasn't a great runner. And you know the deal. Like, you don't have to be the fastest guy. You just can't be the bottom 20%, and you're fine.
Correct.
And so took off, jumped down in the creek, started doing some combatives. They had us fight kind of the biggest dude in the platoon one by one. I didn't wait on my turn. They were kind of doing one at a time. As soon as the guy in front of me tapped out, I just jumped him and landed on his back, you know, and he was way bigger than me. He's probably had me by 100 pounds, I think, at the weight that I shipped.
Wow.
And reached over and grabbed me off his back and ripped me down and held me underwater. And I was tapping, he just kept holding me under. I was like, man, this could be it. Jesus, you know, I'm coming. and choking water. And the sergeant and corporal made him get up. And then we kind of broke up and did some one-on-one. They're sizing up the privates. They're literally, it's this third squad. Which one of these eight guys are we going to go tell the platoon sergeant we want on our squad? And I did a quick, you know, pulled him in close. He resisted and kind of went up, and then I slipped underneath his arm and I choked him out from the rear in like 9 seconds, you know, and just did a quick push pull and exploited that. And then he raged out, you know, and just grabbed me and did the same thing. Like, he harnessed another level of strength because he was pretty mad a private. But then then they selected me. They said, we want spearing, you know. And then, you know, I'm dragging my D-bags into the squad area, and then I give them the virgin don't cuss, don't drink talk. And then they were just like, what the heck? We don't even know what to do with you.
Right.
Because they knew
we made a mistake.
Yeah, they knew I was ferocious because I just jumped the biggest dude in the platoon, you know, where, like, the only way I'm going to win this maybe is if I jump on his back and try to get that choke in before. Yeah. And so they knew I had a mindset, but then they couldn't really, with the stereotype of a Christian, they couldn't really understand what was going on here. And his immediate line was like, I didn't know people like you existed still.
Yeah.
We thought you went extinct in the 60s, you know, and then, but I'm in the squad. And so that kicks everything off. And there are definitely, I can think of a couple Christian guys that were weak that end up getting, you know, fired or made the, you know, the assistant to something. And because the squad leader didn't want them on the team. There was another, at least one other Christian guy in my company, not my platoon. And he and I were always competing to the highest PT score. And we went to Ranger school at the same time. We had to do the pre-Ranger PT test. And our platoon sergeants were talking smack to each other and saying, Spearing's going to take it, you know, and then this other guy. And then they'd come and say, hey, you better beat him. You know, you better not let Jed get you, you know. And so it, being the guy kind of that is – your platoon sergeant's boy that's he's using and there's this healthy banter and the both of us were Christians, you know? And so that, and then actually performing on the battlefield, and doing well, you know, Jesus says in the Sermon on the Mount that blessed are you when people say, call all kinds of evil about you, on account of me, falsely. So a lot of Christians forget the falsely part. If we really looked at our life under the microscope, we're calling it persecution because it's uncomfortable what they're saying about us.
Right.
But our lives are not blameless before the Lord.
Yeah.
It's we did something. We mouthed off. We did this. We added.
Right.
Our sin has actually brought this about. It's not because I got a lot of flack, and I remember one of this platoon sergeants saying, you know, me and this other, he's like, man, I can't believe we're going to have both the candy butts team leaders on this one squad. I don't even, because they did a little Manning shift around, and I was like, yeah, but, you know, those candy behind team leaders are the guys you put on white side breach, you know? And I'm a spec 4 talking to an E7, and I'm like, you're telling me, you're making fun of me. But I'm blowing the main door off the front of the target building in Iraq, and I'm the first guy going through the door, or this other team leader and I are going in. So you're sending us in the main breach of every target while you're making fun of us.
Right.
I think I know what's up here. You know, you're depending on us to be the main effort and a platoon hit. I know the deal. I'm not going to. And even then, there's this kind of banter back and forth. And he's making fun of me because of my convictions, but he knows he can send me in, you know, the main breach. And so that was always the focus. I didn't like it. I can remember times where it, you know, there's a lot of people making fun of the belief, but I put that right into lifting. I put that right into PT. I put that right into jiu-jitsu. I put it into things, and I just focused on being excellent because that's what we're called to be. We're supposed to be perfect as our Heavenly Father is perfect. And that was my focus. And then there was times for sure. I've talked about this story before. The first kind of mission we went on as a squad, I was kind of ready to prove to them that I got what it takes. They've been talking all the smack to saying, we don't know when it actually gets down to it. Are you going to, and he, I mean, literally, my car's like, when it gets down to it, do you have what it takes? You know?
Right.
And we took some detainees off the target, and I was, you know, a little bit rough with them while we're moving them, you know, kind of showing the group think, look, I got this guy, this, you know, this bad guy we got, I rolled him up and I'm kind of being rough, pushing him in the back of the Humvee. And I'm letting myself kind of get in this pack mentality and absorb their value system. And we bring them back kind of to the holding area. It's snowing, and the guy's shivering, you know, in cuffs. And another private that shipped with me and was in my platoon, went through RIP and everything with me, came out and said, this guy's freezing. Get him a blanket. What's your problem?
Yeah.
You know, and he chewed me out
for
not – showing human decency to this other human being because he was, I'm kind of getting caught up. And that was a gracious way for God to smack me upside the head. And that was a heathen, you know, boozing, pornography consuming, you know, guy, and he just cut me probably one of the deepest rebukes that I've ever gotten from someone that didn't know the Lord about my character, to be able to sit there on guard as a private, got this guy and he's shivering and I didn't go get him a blanket. And and I felt so much shame at that point for that way that I was, and I cried out to God. It's like, never again will I do this to, you know. And that's one of those things that when you go to war, it's very easy to let the circumstances and the and the backgrounds lose humanity, lose the sanctity of life, lose the fact that even though this Afghan is in the middle of nowhere and has, you know, fingernails and hands just marred by manual labor and just, you know, crazy hair and no hygiene, image bearer, you know, in our, you know, understanding, held captive by sin and death, and cursed because of the way of life and everything. So, but to still look in that person and see, you know, a human apart from Christ and depravity, but still under all that outward kind of thing, there's a soul there. There's something going on, and and to preserve that and to and to have that kind of really rude awakening at the very beginning, kind of first mission out the gate with my squad, and to say, I'm not gonna try to prove myself to these guys at treating another human being inhumanely, and and setting the stage for kind of that framework I apply. And then I, another thing about, you kind of said that you have your beliefs, I have my beliefs. I feel like that's an excellent framework for those of us in the church. We do not have the ability to function with other believers that differ on us, differ with us on some doctrinal things. Like, not that it's to be made light of. I just had a conversation with Dr. Anthony Esselin. He's a Catholic brother that's just well-read and prolific author, and you know, diving into, I don't have time when the war's going on. Like, we were able to work with heathens to their core, like cheating on their wives, consuming pornography, like in some ways, like we talked about, immature, like little boys in a lot of ways. But we were able to function in an extremely complex hierarchy and get things done. And essentially what that equals is alliance or loyalty and allegiances to other human beings based on a framework that we can agree upon. And so why can't the church do that? And I'm not saying that you should capitulate. Like you said, I believe this, you believe that. You don't want me to be squishy about my beliefs. Like, I need to believe it all the way. Christ is Lord of all, or he's not Lord at all, you know? And Doug says that, and it's crazy. We God's going to judge that. God is going to hold him account. Doesn't mean that we don't, you know, sit back and have some good conversation about it and get into it. But there's relationship there. You have, you know, chips in the bank to be able to kind of cash some of these checks on some more the big things. You've taken the time to be in relationship with each other, and having seen that, like, I literally have accomplished a lot in war, real war, physical war with people, and that didn't have Jesus, and that completely hated my belief system and let me knew every day what they did on the weekend and rubbed it in my face, you know, or whatever. But we were able to say, that's what our belief system is. Now we're going to get to work. And and so I just, it's so hard to see these Christians that I believe we're going to be in fellowship with in heaven bashing each other online while they're mutilating little kids in hospitals. It's just, what's going on, y'all? There's a war. And these energies, we're lobbing shots at each other for the whole world to see. That's going to stay online forever. It's not going to ever lose its potency in some ways. What are we doing? You know?
Yeah.
So
no, that's That's good. Man, there's a lot there, but you're absolutely right. And, you know, for me saying those are your beliefs, these are my beliefs, that's not to downplay in any way what I believe. It's just, as you mentioned, I can't be squishy in the middle of this. Like, this is who I am. This is what I do. This is what I believe. But I'm also not going to chase you around and try to, you know, catch you doing things that that I believe are wrong, that you don't believe are wrong. But I have found that over time, as I'm consistent in what I believe, and, you know, now I'm looking back 20 years to when I was in the Marine Corps, so many of those Marines that I served with that at the time would have made fun of me, you know, again, on the weekends they did whatever and they'd come and tell me about it and would say whatever they needed to say to try to get under my skin or whatever. In 20 years' time, they've had relationship issues and the loss of people that they care about and a lot of confusion. And I've had so many hundreds of conversations with guys that I served with who wouldn't have even talked to me then. But it's that, look, this is, I'm going to hold to this. This is what I hang on to. And you're absolutely right. In the church, there are so many issues we could argue about, but there is a very real culture war going on. And, you know, the other side's not taking prisoners. Meanwhile, we're fighting each other, and it's crazy. I've been studying a part of history that I've never really spent much time on, and that's the Irish Revolution. I don't know if you've spent much time reading about what happened in Ireland in 1916 through, I think, 22. But after the Irish Revolution, that turned into a civil war. So you had, you know, Irish soldiers, part of the IRA, who fought against England and in a lot of ways got what they were, not exactly, but got a lot of what they were hoping for. Well, there were some parts of that they didn't agree on. So these guys who had been fighting for the same thing for so long turned on each other and started killing each other. And in the things that I've been reading about the Civil War, these soldiers talking about just how brokenhearted they were to be fighting with their countrymen over silly, silly things when the big enemy was still out there. And in so many ways, the church is doing that. You're exactly right. We've got to figure out what's important and hang on to that. Doctrine is important. What we believe is important. That's not to say you should, again, capitulate, but let's agree on what we can agree on and fight the battle in front of us.
Yeah, we want to be the judge. We want to sit in that seat and render the verdict on everybody. It's very easy for us as men to say, I'm the guy that makes the decision on this. I have considered all the evidence, what this one guy told me. That's it. And I'm rendering this verdict, and I want to be God. You know, that's that. It's back to the very beginning in the garden. Yeah. You know, did God really say? Does God really know what he's talking about?
Yeah.
And
right.
And then, you know, there's guys that would say, they would say the Lord's name in vain. You know, they'd be playing video games back in the tent or the, you know, and they'd say it and they'd be like, oh, sorry, Spearing, you know? And I was like, dude, you do not have to apologize to me.
Right.
That's not me that you're taking the name. I mean, that's between you and the creator of the universe, you know? And then they kind of be like, ooh, you know, I'm like, no, that's the gravity of this, you know? It's not me. I appreciate that me being here is convicting you about it, but this is something that you got to work out between him and you, and you will answer for sure. And so that just seeing that, and I think that framework helped. So be like, look, dude, if you think that that's going to be fulfilling in the long run and you think that that's it and that's what, and you think I'm so wrong. Okay. You know, that's your thing. And I don't have as high of a profile probably as you and where you're at. But when I started kind of doing this and putting stuff out on social media intentionally and in some ways was kind of being private and then not really wanting to talk about it, not really wanting to be and I started to kind of feel convicted. Like, this is you putting your light under a bushel, you know, put it on a lampstand and for that gives light, you know, into the room. And so I just kind of was like, pretty definitively back in kind of the beginning of 2020 and just being like, okay, I see what's going on. I see this play, I think, in a different way, and I'm going to make a concerted effort to just put stuff out and specifically posting some of my kids singing psalms. You know, there's a certain gravity to children's voices praising praising God, and then even sometimes doing a little bit of harmony stuff because our church culture is really big on starting kids singing men singing, doing the parts, and it being a demonstration of kind of the spectrum of creation in the different harmonies and the way that men's and women's voices go together. So I posted a psalm of us singing around, singing psalms around the table. And one of the squad leaders from my platoon back in the day when I was, the same era where they're making fun of me and stuff, he was just like, I wish I would have made God more of a priority. That was incredibly powerful. So I don't think I was really ever active making fun of you, but I definitely didn't say anything to support you, and I was silent. Right. And I'm looking at your life now, and your family's beautiful, and your life is amazing, and I wish God would have been more of a priority. And I think that that is, in a sense, probably 16, 17 years ago when that was. And so that's a little tiny bit of fruit that you see from that. And I think that we can want to see the result right now. Cause effect. I was good for God here. God gave me this nice big house. Yep. I was good for this, like this blessing and back and forth. And even just to realize that I may plant, another may water, and to realize that I may never know. Several times I feel like when I was kind of just really down, God brought one little conversation. I remember one guy, one of my fellow team leaders came over, and I was just kind of just really feeling the pressure of it. And I was just kind of sitting there on my bunk, and the guy just walked over. And he's like, you know why they're making fun of you, right? And I'm like, what? And he's like, they know you're right,
Yeah.
And that was just like that little thing. And it's like, okay, God was gracious enough to kind of give me a little bit of light when I felt kind of just was feeling bad for myself. And then even, as you know the deal, as there's going to be days when you're putting yourself out there like this, you can feel like the biggest hypocrite. Why am I even talking about this stuff? Why am I even the guy on stage right now? Why am I the guy talking in this microphone? What do I know? And then a guy will just be like, dude, I just listened to that podcast episode. I can't believe it changed my life. It did this. Yeah. And it's like, okay. There's some fruit. There's something going on here. And even that being out of neither you or I are sitting here saying, Nathan's got it all together. Look at me. It's weakness. It's pouring ourselves out and let God be glorified. And when you start to try to build your own kingdom and you start to try to build yourself up and you try to get glory for you, that's when it's not going to work out. But if you're pouring yourself out, then the counterintuitiveness of the gospel is that you get it back. You lose your life and you gain it.
Yeah.
Anyway, for what that's worth.
It's incredible. I've talked before about how serving God is crazy, right? Because we use phrases like, well, you need to be obedient to God. You need to honor God. You need to fear God. The Bible talks about all of those things. But those all have a negative connotation to us. But the crazy thing about the Christian life is as you live for God, we are the ones who are blessed in the process. Mm-hmm. And that's something that, again, people just don't get. It feels like this oppressive thing, like God wants to hurt you somehow, or he's waiting for you to mess it up or waiting for you to do wrong. When the message of the Bible and our relationship to God, certainly he is God. He is well above us. He is to be honored. He is holy. In many ways, he is fearful when we understand the contrast between, our sinful nature and who he is as a holy God. But the relationship that man can have with God because of Christ is a relationship where God calls us to serve him because that's best for us in relationship with him, and we benefit from that. And the Christian life is crazy that way. And until you start to make those decisions, you don't really understand that. One of the things that, again, you and I have talked about a little bit, we have a friend in common, and I talked to him probably right after our interview last time we talked. And we were talking about some of this, about him and some of the decisions he's made, but also some of the decisions that you've made with your family. And as, kind of an observer of some of the decisions you've made to honor God and to invest in your family, those decisions would be counterintuitive to the world.
Mm-hmm.
At the maybe the peak of your military career, you decided that you would be done with that.
Mm-hmm.
You've made financial decisions and physical decisions that to a lot of people from the outside looking in would be counterintuitive. Before we wrap up, can you talk about the process that you, maybe you and your wife went through to make some of these major life decisions? And you outlined some of this even on your website, major life decisions that may have seemed crazy to other people, but you knew were the right thing to do and you led your family through that. Can you just kind of talk about the process of that? Because I believe, honestly, a lot of people are not in a dissimilar situation. There are a lot of people who just, they know they should do something different. They're unwilling to pull the trigger on that. And I think your story can be a motivation to, you know, a lot of people who are just waiting to follow somebody, right, and go forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that every one of us has certain things that we are callous to or that we can tolerate, and then certain things that really get us and really make us anxious. So for my particular case, and I wasn't really able to understand this about myself until I was not sure how I was going to pay my mortgage and a small business owner.
Yeah.
But I realized that I built up a tolerance for risk in the physical warfare realm. I had numerous times where the enemy coulda shoulda got me, and I saw God provide, God protect. And essentially developed that over reps every time. Okay, wasn't the time, you know.
Yeah.
Again, God, you said not now, you know. And so I became, in a sense, even though for the normal guy, getting shot at seems like a crazy thing and I couldn't imagine doing it, I did the reps. And I had the worldview that supported what my actions were, but then I did the reps. I did the work. Now, when I decided to leave the military, I didn't know that, you know, the reason why I was able to really focus and double down is that the military kind of just takes care of the rest of life for you. You know, you get a direct deposit on the 1st and 15th. You're always going to get that. You know, you got 31 days of leave or 30 days of leave a year. You got, you know, 18 government holidays that usually end up being 4-day weekends. And so you get a lot of time off. You get a great, you know, upper middle class salary, direct deposit, allowance for housing, you know, healthcare, you know, military support groups to try to, you know, at least make your wife not be too much of a boat anchor to you going and doing amazing things,
sure.
You know?
Sure.
And so when all that kind of support structure went away, I realized that financial risk and these other things was not something that I was comfortable with. And I just, you know, the moment that I knew I was done, I was working in an embassy overseas. You know, I was advising in counterterrorism things, and I was watching my family open Christmas presents on Skype, you know, the iPad out.
Yeah, wow.
And so I was kind of in this, you know, bureaucratic political system. And and ultimately it was DOD, Department of Defense, that I felt like had some serious things that were just not efficient. Like, we've been doing wars a long time. Why is it taking so long to get approval? Why is it taking so long to get this, you know, word back? How come we can't get this money? We need to help this, you know, thing. And then that just being contrasted with watching all four of my kids at the time they were at my parents' house, you know, doing Christmas, opening presents. Mm. And I'm just like, what am I doing? You know, what do I think I'm up to over here? I gotta be there, you know?
Yeah.
And essentially at that point began it was probably about a year and a half after that particular moment. Because I went to my boss and I was just like, I'm done. But I understand that there's a machine here and that I'm a little cog in this thing. And so there's responsibilities and I need to, but just, can you help me plan out my exit strategy, and I'm ready to be done now. And he said, hey, we got this kind of year thing. We're doing this cycle. We need you to be here. And so helped me kind of plan it out, my exit, and then took, you know, 3 to 6 months to kind of do the medical stuff that you just kind of blow off all the things that are hurting after 14 years and 12 deployments that you just kind of put off. And then, you know, we had been doing real estate on the side. So, you know, when other people are just vegging on their 30 days off and their 4-day weekends, I was tiling bathrooms. I was remodeling old houses essentially during active duty service between 2009 or 2010, January 2010, and then December 16 when I got out. My wife and I remodeled and three houses. And whoa, what that equaled was equity. It equaled added value. So my discretionary income was going into tile, was going into plumbing fixtures, was going into these things that actually immediately improved our life because we're using one bathroom. Now let's get this other bathroom online so we have one downstairs. Right. We're not having to walk upstairs. And so my discretionary time, my discretionary income was going towards stuff that was bringing a yield. And I wasn't real estate mogul reading all these books. I just literally bought a broke down house in a great place because my wife wanted to be a couple blocks from the shops. You know, I was like, well, this one's pretty cheap because it's, and I think I figured this out. And so that just worked out and it was hard. We would just not go on leave, or I take local leave. I go in for part of the day and just, you know, save up leave so that we would have it for longer periods of time or whatever. Yeah. And essentially that gave us a buffer to be able to have at least a little bit of hubris to just jump and go for it. That being said, I had, you know, 80,000, 70,000 in the bank. I just closed a new real estate deal and I found I was going to have to pay my bonus back, 2 days. I just put $108,000 on my next flip house. I had tithed, you know, wrote the check in a sense because I was like, I'm gonna write this check right away off the bat. Put $108,000 down. So I just, I posted kind of a chart on Instagram of my finances, and then God was like, no, that's too much margin for you. You know, you need to pay your bonus back now. I found I was going to get taxed on it. So I was like, oh, I got to write a $37,000, $39,000 wow thing. Bought a truck for $18,000 and a trailer. So I could start, it's like, I got to figure out how to make some money. So I'm going to put this money into a rig that I can start doing construction for other people. And then we got down to, you know, we had two mortgages at the time. We had three units. We moved into a house that had no AC, and rented the other two out, and no benefits because I got out at 14 years, yep, like no medical. And so I think that for the listener that's scared to jump, scared to go for it, first of all, that belief that you have inside of you that you should be doing something else is likely a gentle prodding of the Holy Spirit to do it. God put each one of us specifically here to do something that only we can do. And so when you're playing get safe, when you're not doing the thing that the Holy Spirit is whispering to you when you're laying down in your pillow at night, I really feel bad about this. My kids are in public school. They're rolling out all this woke stuff. I should probably homeschool. How am I going to homeschool them? How am I going to do that? How are we going to afford it? How are we going to do this? How are we going to, you know, my wife really needs the work. I need to do this. I can't, you know, and you just tolerate the normal kind of thing that the superstructures of our society are saying, you know, you got to have this. It's impossible to make it on just one income. It's so, you know, how can you do this? How can you, you know, and the reality is our entire society in America, those of us that have traveled to Afghanistan, those of us who have traveled to North Africa, those who have traveled, you know, Asia, all these places, we live fat and happy in America. Right. And I tell my kids, you know, there's whole communities living in the dump in North Africa. There's nobody at the dump as a general contractor when I take my dump trailer in there. There's nobody there. There's piles and piles of stuff around, you know, and that is, we are rich and we are comfortable. And we're scared of risk. I just got back from a Christian conference. Everybody kind of knows, like, man, we should start a small business. We should kind of make our home economy productive. We should be producing. We should have maybe take more interest in what we're eating. And maybe we can, you know, grow some stuff at home. We can do this. And all the questions in the question and answer time were about risk. Should I? And everybody's wanting the formula. You know, what's the steps to own your own business? Should you buy a business? Should you start one? Should you do this? Is it better to be in this industry? It's like all of those questions at the very bottom of it are you trying to de-risk what God has called you to do that is inherently a risk. If every time the Israelites went into battle, God took away the odds that they felt like were in their favor. God made that choir go out front. You know, why are you going to have the choir and the pastors lead the march around Jericho? Are you crazy,
right.
God?
Right.
You know, are you up?
Yeah.
And take your son up on the mount there, and I want you to offer him as a sacrifice to me. And Abraham having the faith to believe that God's going to bringing him back to life. Like I don't know what's going on here, but to walk it out. And every single hero of the faith was put in a position that seemed impossible. And the paraphrase of a G.K. Chesterton quote, it's like one of the most plain glimpses of the divine or God here on earth is to fight a losing battle and not lose because of God. And so where I am, I've say to the people that are still in the military or where I am, we live in the dream. I am firmly convinced because I've seen God's hand work in ways that I could not possibly have expected when I thought there was no hope. Again, I was here. Yeah. I've seen God do it 100 times before. I'm here again. I'm whining about it. What is going to happen? I don't know. I don't know how I'm going to pay my mortgage this month. You know, I don't know how I'm going to, the tax bill's due. I didn't do a good job planning taxes this year. I got to write a big check. Where's that going to come from? I don't know. This client's being, not going to write this check. All these things that remind me that I'm not in control. And then just to trust. God's got this, And so I have been, and he is, if you are living boldly for Christ and you're doing what he's called you to do, in my experience, post-military, even in the military, it's going to somewhat kind of feel like insane at every single day because you're pushing into faith. You're stepping out of the boat and walking on water because you see God is there. That's where I'm supposed to go. I'm going to get out, And those of us look at Peter and be like, that dude didn't have the faith. He started to sink, What about all the other dudes that stayed in the boat, And so I would say, what is that thing that is your boat? And when you see God over there and he's beckoning you to come to him and you believe he brought 40 years of manna on the ground one day at a time for the Israelites. It's not about storehouses. It's about daily bread, and it's about walking towards the Heavenly Father. And when you do that, you walk on water. You walk on water. Yep. And I literally have seen that, and I've sunk. I start to think, oh, no, how am I going to pay my mortgage? I don't know what's going to happen. Jesus takes my hand, lifts it up. Client writes a check. Yeah. Easiest check I've ever gotten in the last 6 months. Here you go. Like that day when I send them the invoice, direct deposit, But it's also the work that you have to do. And so I'd say most men, most people in America aren't really willing to work as hard as they need to go to where God is calling them. So there's a laziness and a lack of faith. And when you as an American step out of comfort and you do the work, life is the greatest it could possibly. You don't even know. Like it's just Jordan Peterson. I hope he comes to the faith. He said, speaking the truth is the greatest adventure because you're saying what you believe, and in a sense, going after the work that God has called you to, starting that business, homeschooling your kids, going to that church and giving yourself in relationship to other people, pouring yourself out and walking towards the Heavenly Father, you're going to walk on water. It's guaranteed. He loves you.
Yeah.
He wants the best for you. It's going to all work together ultimately for his good. And you want to be a part of that.
Yeah, man, that's good. We're going to have to do another podcast at some point where we actually talk about biblical masculinity. So that'll be, we'll reschedule that one for another time. Man, there's so much good here. I really appreciate just your honesty and transparency and your lived experience that helps, kind of put in context what a lot of people are living and how to make those faith decisions, not allowing fear or the spirit of fear to overrule us. You have a great podcast, a great blog. Where can people find both of those and learn more about you and your family and what you guys are up to?
Yes, the hub of that is kind of the website, spearing.co, spearing.co. The social handles are kind of all up at the top. We got the podcast called Life on Target. You know, essentially, the Greek word for sin is to miss the mark. So kind of that theme of taking aim, also understanding that as an infantry guy, you know, taking aim, disciplining yourself to hit the mark, close that shot group. So, Life on Target podcast, it's on all the major, you know, podcast streaming apps. And I'm just kind of, as I am struggling through something, as I'm processing it, I'm talking about it, kind of the most pressing thing that came up, do some solo episodes, and then more recently, a bunch of interviews. We're going to have a really talented Marine coming out in the next couple of weeks we talk about some good things.
You do have some good guests on. I'm not going to lie. You've got some great guests that come on.
So, yeah, well, and I would love to hear from a couple of your listeners. Shoot me a message and tell me how you got out of the boat. And what God did the first rep, you know, what he did for you when you took the action and you got to work. I'm looking forward to hearing from him.
That's awesome. Man, I appreciate you and very grateful for you and your testimony and glad we're connected. It's funny how many people we knew in common before we actually met. And so it's pretty cool how God brings all that together. But Nathan, thank you and look forward to doing it again soon.
Awesome.
I so appreciate that conversation, and that was one, and we even talked a little bit after I stopped recording, that was a conversation that could have gone on for a lot longer. So much to unpack there, so many just great insights and an understanding of things at a very high level, and it's a level that all of us need to get a hold of. We need to realize that there is something on the other side of fear. We allow fear to prevent us from doing what God wants us to do. We need to rather, by faith, hang on to God and let him do the work that he desires to do in our lives. And man, that conversation has impacted me, and I trust that it will impact you as well. Please, if you are not yet subscribed to the show, do that right now on your podcast platform of choice. Go ahead and subscribe and then share this out with other people. As we continue to expand our audience, we can continue to put out content like this. And I trust that this is helpful to you. And we need to get as much of this out to as many people as possible. So please check that out. When you are done doing that, go over to lifeaudio.com. I mention this just about every episode, but this podcast is hosted on Life Audio's platform, and they have so many wonderful shows there, shows that deal with just about every aspect of the Christian life. You can find something there on marriage and parenting, studying the Bible, shows directed toward men and Christian living in general. Check that out, lifeaudio.com, and you'll be glad that you did. As we leave, I will remind you that when the bullets are coming your direction, when it seems like the world around you is falling apart or, more dangerously, exploding, as it sometimes does, you only have two choices. You can stay where you are and die. You can do that. Kick it into neutral. Stay where you are and die. Or you can march. Thankfully, the choice is always yours. Thank you. I'll talk to you next time.
Finding uplifting news in today's headlines is often like searching for a needle in a haystack. At the Story Behind podcast, we believe in the power of finding heartwarming tales and are happy to share empowering stories with you every week. Get inspired by the note a waitress received from a patron dining alone, and even hear about how one VIP passenger made a hardworking pilot get emotional before his flight. To start listening to the Story Behind podcast, visit lifeaudio.com.